Chapter 10. Iron and Fire as One.
The Sorad withdraws,
intoned Jebez Org, a silent partner on the bridge of the Iron Heart until that moment. Medjuson nodded, restive. Even from the rudimentary description afforded by the hololith, he could see the tactical landscape changing. With the annihilation of the two destroyers, another two ships from the flotilla had altered course, coming about to engage the retreating Sorod and the smaller but no less deadly Stormcrow.
Neuros and Dalkoth will be on the run now,
said Makosa, as intent on the battle display as his war leader.
Do we intercede?
Not yet, Medjuson said quickly, shaking his head. Frenetic spools of data fed across the hololith. A broken line manifested across the display.
They are range-finding, said Org in a hushed voice.
Since its triumphs, the Stormcrow had successfully disengaged from the battlesphere, but had begun to turn to help defend the wounded ironclad.
We hold, said Medjuson. Those are Sons of Horus ships. I won't commit until they are severely disadvantaged. And Neuros and Dalkoth?
Asked Org. Makosa's studied silence suggested he had the same question in his mind, but chose not to voice it. Medjuson looked sidelong at the Iron Father.
No plan is without risk. We cannot act until they are separated. Are the other freighters in position? They await your signal, War Leader.
Including more? Org scowled.
The Red Talon and his other ships are still with us.
There is something more? Asked Medjuson.
Lumak thinks he's waiting to see if you're killed during the battle so he can assume command.
Medjuson laughed without mirth.
The Averni see treachery everywhere they look, even amongst allies. Don't you too, War Leader?
Of course, but I don't plan on dying during this battle either. Mor
need only do his part. I hope he joins us, but if he has his own plans, then so be it. For now, he serves the mutual good. So let's put that dread reputation of his to use. I will not eschew any weapon in my arsenal. I cannot. Even if that blade has a double edge?
Medjuson nodded, acknowledging the risk, but remained unmoved.
I will simply keep it at arm's length.
A third vessel broke off from the flotilla, effectively splitting the Sons of Horus into two smaller formations. Two more destroyers, the last of the complement, came with it, scenting revenge.
The 16th are excellent warriors, and do not underestimate how difficult it was for me to say that. But they are also prideful, said Medjuson. Makosa, give the signal. The vanguard shall engage.
Makosa saluted and went to his orders.
And the freighters?
Org asked.
Await second signal, and that includes more. We have to cut them in half, Org, then attack when they are in disarray. I have never known one of the 16th to be in disarray.
Then we shall educate them, Medjuson replied, before raising his voice to the bridge.
Battle stations, all hands!
Lurking at the edge of Augur range, running silent, the Iron Heart and its fellow ships of the Vanguard began to move. Lurching from engines almost cold to full burn put significant strain on the flagship, the pain of which resonated throughout its hull. The bridge was still shuddering, awash with crimson light, as the Iron Heart and the rest of the Vanguard emerged from the radiation well of a dying starfield to launch torpedoes.
Org?
Asked Medjuson, as the missiles streaked into the void, tiny thrusters blazing.
The Unyielding Glory, Ferrum Unbowed, and Gorgon's Will have all launched.
That was Arkel Theld, Jakus, and Lumak. Across the hololith, a myriad of small markers designated the three torpedo spreads. The ships segregated from the Sons of Horus flotilla increased power to their shields, the telltale energy flare registering on the Ironheart's sensors.
We have their attention, War Leader, said Makosa.
Medjuson nodded, calculating as the tactical situation evolved before his eyes.
Enemy fighters inbound,
added the Sorgul captain. A swarm of smaller signifiers appeared on the hololith, rushing on an intercept course with the torpedoes.
Retaliate in kind,
said Medjuson, and Makosa signaled down to the fighter bays. A second swarm, in opposition to the first, flashed up on the battlesphere. Three of the enemy vessels turned to engage the vanguard, moving with glacial slowness. It would take several minutes for the payloads from the Iron Hand's ships to reach their targets, and the Sons of Horus pushed their engines hard to avoid the torpedoes, not trusting entirely to their inceptors to neutralize them. The other two, an escort and a destroyer, never deviated course, but drove harder for the retreating Sorod. The Stormcrow had already reached engagement range, and an exchange of lance fire had begun. At the corward-facing head of the flotilla, the other Sons of Horus ships started to adopt defensive postures. At such distance, however, it would take time before they could reach even maximum weapons range. Medjuson knew he needed to exploit that.
"Increase power to engines," he said calmly. "Prime main weapon batteries and intensify forward void shield strength.
We shall hit these bastards like a damn hammer."
Orders were heard and obeyed. Forward laser batteries and lances quickly charged to optimum across the vanguard. All that they had suffered, the death and the dishonor of scurrying around like whipped dogs, was done.
"No more," Medjuson vowed.
The Iron Tenth would be reborn. He raised his head, vindicated, vengeful.
"Open fire!"
Flames gutted the chthonic blood, rendering its engines inoperable, its main weapons useless, and filling the ship with caustic smoke. Neuros hurried down a narrow corridor, belabored by the body of a wounded salamander slung over his back. Blood painted Neuros's armor, dark and shiny in the cruiser's emergency lumens. Some of it belonged to him. Most had come from the legionary he carried. The Sons of Horus had proven hard to kill, despite the Drake's numerical advantage. Neuros had expected that. He had not expected such a toll on his own men. 12 lay dead, left behind in the Enginarium. Most of the rest carried injuries, some serious, but the chthonic blood lay inert in the void thanks to them. And that was not nothing. Though the ship was crippled, its defenders were not. Voxhorns blared out at every junction, summoning reinforcements. Another stretch of corridor, and the boarders would gain the access way. From there, the gunships and a grateful egress. Sweat, blood, noise, all coalesced into a confused cacophony of sensory attack and urgent motion for Neuros. The warriors ahead calling back, unleashing covering fire down every half-dark junction, the ones behind forming the rearguard or slowing dangerously off the pace. Those by his side huddled in close formation, low on ammunition, gripping blades slick with transhuman blood. Armor chipped, chain blades missing teeth, retinal lenses cracked like broken window panes. The grim realization of a gorget breach. Their flight felt like a hurried rout through enemy territory.
"Drake?"
A voice intruded on Neuros's thoughts, warring for supremacy with the soaring heaves of his breath.
"Drake,"
he heard again, still largely oblivious, but questioning now whether the voice was his own or if it belonged to someone outside of his head.
"Neuros!"
A hand on his shoulder confirmed the latter, as did the bloody black figure of Kalar Norn, now standing in his path. Everything looked red. Neuros blinked, first to get the blood out of his eyes, and again to shut down his armor's screaming biodamage alerts. He felt mildly punch-drunk.
"Apothecary?"
Norn came in close, a sane man trying to convince a mad one of his insanity.
"He's dead. Let him go, Neuros."
They had reached a bulkhead and had several meters of reinforced adamantium between them and their chasing enemies. On Neuros's retinal display, hazed with spasms of static, another icon had turned red. Releasing a labored breath through his respirator grill, he shrugged the dead salamander off his back and onto the deck. Blood quickly pooled, not all of it the deceased's. Norn knelt by the body as soon as it hit the ground. The chain blade mounted on his wrist began to growl. He punched with his gauntlet, once into the dead warrior's chest, then into the throat. The reductor did the rest, salvaging the legionary's progenoids in the hope that one day they would be implanted anew, if any of them lived to see such times again.
"He that may fight no more, give him peace," Norn whispered.
"Is that it, Raven?"
asked Neuros, impatient to be moving again. Norn nodded, bitter.
"I shan't need the Carnifex for this one."
Then he rose, as cold as death, and on they went. A blistering hail of lance fire and concussive laser blasts spat out, shots arrowing like comets into the void. Light blazed angry and bright, almost overwhelming the ocular senses of the enemy thousands of kilometers away.
"Again, another volley!" said Lumac,
his voice a deep basso rumbling inside his war helm. He seldom removed it any more, the helm as much a part of him as his flesh and his blood and his grief. It struck him as odd to think of such things, to have such concerns. He was an Iron Hand, of the Clan Averni, one of the miserable few who remained. Often, though, in spite of logic and the coldness of the machines wrought into his body, he believed all he had left to him was grief and shame and hate. It was why he cleaved so to Medjuson, a Terran of all things, and a true Gorgon's son in spite of his provenance. Ferus Manus had died. Nothing Lumac could do now would alter that fate. He wished he had died too, but he had lived. That continued existence came with a heavy burden, his profound dishonour. No, he could not change his Primarch's death, but he could mete out vengeance against those responsible. No deed, however grand, even the execution of Horus himself by Lumac's own iron hand, could erase his shame, but it would at least be something, a small measure.
My lord,
inquired the shipmaster of the Gorgon's will. Lumac had not realized he had said those last words aloud.
A small measure of what, sire?
Peace, Lumac replied. Atonement? I'm not sure it really matters any more.
The shipmaster looked about to answer, but appeared to find he did not have the appropriate response.
Again, said Lumac.
The barrage continued. As the vessels on both sides closed, the exchange of fire between them intensified. So ferocious was the response from the Iron Hand ships that the two enemy vessels chasing down the Sorod turned to engage the larger and undamaged cruisers. How long the Iron Heart and her fellow ships in the vanguard would remain that way was unknown. An almost constant flare of void shield distortion obscured the oculus now, as the Sons of Horus matched their aggressors volley for volley. Medjuson marvelled at their fire discipline and sheer tenacity. Even outgunned, the renegades showed their worth and the reason they were the War Master's Legion. Medjuson hated them passionately for that most of all.
You should have been the best of us.
His eyes narrowed as he followed the delicate balance of the engagement and saw at last a weakness.
Shields at severely reduced efficacy, my lord,
reported the shipmaster, his brow furrowed as he stooped over the helm.
We can sustain one, maybe two further volleys before they collapse, and we are forced to reinstate.
And how long will that take?
Medjuson had fought in several void battles, and though he had developed a keen understanding of its principles, he neither liked it nor grasped all of its subtle nuances.
Several minutes, sire.
A smaller but no less vital conflict played out in the closing gulf between the two groups of ships, the entirely more balletic duel between fighter craft. Again, the Iron Hands ships had the larger squadrons, but the 16th Legion's pilots proved both wily and tenacious. As a result, torpedoes were proving of little use, at least for the moment. Medjuson grinned ferrily and marked one of the enemy ships.
Here, he said. The energy signature is lower.
The shipmaster hurriedly looked to his console, as if only just noticing what the war leader had identified. The mortal officer returned Medjuson's grin with one of his own.
Shield collapse imminent.
Signal the rest of the vanguard,
the war leader said to Makosa, who had already opened channels and was about to issue the order when the ship's vox crackled. Org paused, staring blindly for a few seconds.
A signal, he said, frowning.
From where does it originate? Medjuson asked, and felt the Iron Father tense.
Not one of ours.
Org turned and faced the war leader, as if needing to in order to convey the truth of his next words.
A request for cessation and parley.
Medjuson scowled. He watched the oculus.
Shipmaster?
The mortal officer had been wiping his still furrowed brow. In fact, his frown had deepened.
Enemy vessels are holding position. Weapons are silent. Ceasefire. All stop, but keep the engines warm. Any word from the other freighters or more?
Org shook his head. Static still laced the vox between the disparate Iron Hands war parties, blamed on distance and interference from the void.
What is the meaning of this?
Asked Mikosa.
Is this wise, war leader? Said Org. Their vessels will be able to regroup.
Probably not, but I will not attack an enemy during a ceasefire, and they aren't moving yet, he said, and raised his voice to address the shipmaster. Those void shields, shipmaster!
Yes, my lord.
They are still depleted according to our instruments?
They are, my lord.
Should that change, unleash everything we've got at that ship.
The shipmaster gave a fierce salute. He cut a ragged but proud figure in his shabby uniform.
It will be a genuine pleasure, sire.
An eerie calm fell upon the bridge, still darkly lit, according to battle stations. All ears awaited the vox. Org was the first to break the tense silence, exhaling deeply, ruefully.
What is it, freighter? Asked Medjuson,
correctly interpreting Org's mood.
I have identified the specific bearer of the signal, he said,
and then revealed who it was. Whatever invective had been about to pass Medjuson's lips was stalled as the rough voice of Tybalt Marr issued over the vox.
Medjuson! This is a message for the beggar lord known as Shadrach Medjuson.
How did he know we would be here?
Hissed Mikosa, agitated. Org motioned for his silence. The answer to that would have to come later. Medjuson said nothing, watching the hololith but finding no sign of the Lupercal pursuivant. He listened, teeth gritted.
Days have passed. Years will not. So know this, ragged iron son. I have weathered your storm, and I have found you, and I shall have your head just as I promised. This I swear by the War Master, and the true Lord of Mankind.
The message ended.
Enemy ships are entering the void, my lord!
The shipmaster cried out. Three additional cruisers intruded at the edge of the Oculus, low on the battlesphere, their presence hitherto baffled from the Iron Hands' auger sweeps. The rest had begun to re-engage weapons and engines, swinging the pendulum back in the Renegade's favour.
Is the Lupercal pursuivant amongst them?
No, my lord. Should we retaliate?
The message restarted, grating from the vox. Medjuson seethed, recognising his mistake, so angry he did not answer immediately. Org was about to intercede on his behalf when finally he spoke.
Kill them! Kill that damn ship!
The barrage recommenced, and the gulf was filled again with light and fury. One of the Sons of Horus frigates exploded, scattering debris across the void, the ruptures of its death short-lived but explosive. The fire of its destruction died quickly, starved of sustenance. But it ravaged the ship's innards before it expired. Chunks of the disintegrating vessel collided against the shields of larger cruisers and were annihilated on impact. As the return barrages began to hit the Ironheart's shields, Medjuson recognized it for what it was, a petty victory. Three more Sons of Horus ships had joined the fray, large and imposing, unharmed and with weapons ablaze. The entire phalanx had begun to turn, slowly angling its more numerous and destructive broadsides to bear. The Sorod and Stormcrow had been forgotten. One could do little but shrink away from the fight, bruised and bleeding beyond its capacity to easily shrug off. The other had disengaged, recognizing the futility of an attack against a reinforced and re-prepared enemy. And to the corward side, burning hard from a starboard aspect, high on the battlesphere, the rest of the flotilla was coming.
Second signal, ordered Medjuson.
With the freighter's ships, they could still wring out a costly victory. Mikosa tried, then shook his head.
Still nothing, said Medjuson. No response. The enemy could be impeding vox.
Shields are at less than 10%, my lord,
announced the shipmaster. Alert sirens sounded, droning and insistent. On the Oculus, the unyielding glory suffered a sudden shield failure and took a fearsome hit. Arkel Theld's voice came across the vox, strained, smothered by screaming klaxons.
We are hit! We are hit,
he said.
Shields are
Static took the rest of his words.
Have we lost the unyielding glory?
Medjeson demanded, frustrated at the sudden turn from supremacy to confusion.
"It flies still," said Org.
He had closed his eyes and spoke as if he stood upon the ship himself.
"The bridge is badly damaged. Felled? I don't know. Emergency stations are in effect. They are withdrawing to defensive postures."
He blinked and returned to the Iron Heart.
"Forward shields almost depleted, my lord,"
cried the shipmaster, fighting against the alert sirens.
"Slow engines. Turn hard to port," ordered Medjeson. "We'll show them our flank and roll out the broadsides."
He turned to the Sorgul captain by his side.
"And Makosa, get those damn freighters to engage, or we'll be debris by the time they deign to act."
Hidden by floating debris and lost in the deadly fire exchange, a small ship emerged into the void, a minnow amongst leviathans. It literally appeared as if from the ether, yet emerged not from the warp, for no ship that size could survive such a place without a Geller field, but rather from somewhere else entirely.